The cinema has had a problematic history of stereotyping and denigrating people of color, especially so when it comes to images of Native Americans on film. But one discovery a few years ago of a once-lost film has added a refreshing chapter to the history of Native American cinema and reminds us of the value of film as a preserver of our shared history and culture. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The rediscovery and restoration of the 1920 film The Daughter of Dawn was important news for cinephiles and film historians, but doubly so for those who study the portrayal of Native Americans in the arts. My guest today is Dr. Bob Blackburn, Executive Director of the Oklahoma Historical Society, one of the entities that leapt at the chance to preserve and protect this important piece of American film. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Charles. Thanks for having me on.
A delight, and a delight to watch this film. You know, I guess the discovery of lost films, we have news like that every year or two of important pieces, particularly from the silent period, a period that has so little material still in existence. So any lost silent film being found is big news, but I gather doubly so for a film like this, which has an all-Native American cast, really the rarest of rare titles.
Yes, this film is unique, and we knew that the film had been made because the producers filed the scripts and still photographs from production with the Library of Congress. And one of our curators at one of our museums that we operate in Oklahoma found a set of those images in our little museum in Altus, Oklahoma, which is southwestern Oklahoma. It was the home of the Comanches and the Kiowas and the Caddos and so many of those Southern Plains tribes. And he started doing the research and discovered the story. And unfortunately, he said in the last paragraph, the film did not survive. So we knew the film had been made. We knew the story. We knew that Quanah Parker, the great Comanche chief's son, was the star. We knew over 300 Kiowas and Comanches were in it. We knew it was made in the Wichita Mountains, which is this magical place out on the high plains. And when we got that first phone call from a man who said he had a print, we obviously were interested.
You know exactly what to do.
Well, you know, in your introduction, you said leapt at the chance. It's more like we gradually became aware of the opportunities. If I had known what it was going to take to actually acquire, preserve, create a score, distribute, I'm not sure we would have leapt at it at the time. So a little bit of ignorance is, I guess, is bliss from time to time.
That's right.
Because it took us almost 10 years to complete this project, but so glad we did.
And the important thing was that you had the background to know, to recognize the significance of this find.
Right. Our job, of course, we say our motto around here is we collect, preserve, and share. So we said we've got to collect this. We've got to get this into the collections. It's a rare piece of Americana. It's on film. We knew, and we could recognize some of the accoutrements, the teepees, what the people were wearing. We knew that these were not props. We knew that these were objects that came out of the homes and the closets and the attics of these American Indians living in Oklahoma, being forced to take allotments, told to cut your hair, get rid of your language. But yet here they still had all of this, and we knew that they would have dance scenes that just come right out of the 19th century, that they had a buffalo hunt scene that was right out of the 19th century. So we knew we needed to collect it, and we did, and raised a little money to buy it. And then we got a grant to preserve it through the National Film Foundation. Ironically, the technician who did the preservation and transfer to safety film in Los Angeles was from Oklahoma. So it's still an all-Oklahoma project at that time. But I'll never forget the day when we got that package back, and I put one of the digitized DVDs in my computer. Tears came to our eyes. We said, this is it. We've got this. And we knew at that moment we had to do more than just collect it. We had to share it. And then that became the adventure that was just completed recently.
We should back up and say that this film, for its time, there were certainly images of actual Native Americans in customary dress and dancing and things. It was a little early to be called documentaries, but there were, I know the Edison Company, even back in the 1890s and early 1900s, came through the West and did what they called actualities, where they would just shoot scenes of daily life, and sometimes those captured these cultures. But what was fascinating to me is this is an actual narrative film, a feature-length film in which the entire cast are Native American and telling a Native American story, albeit one with a classical one that I think most people who watch movies will understand. Can you recap for us just briefly the story within this film?
Yes, the story is a love triangle. The daughter of Don is the daughter of the chief of a Kiowa village, and there's the black-hearted bad guy, Black Wolf, and then the lead is played by Quanah Parker's son, who's a good guy, but doesn't have the horses. He's not quite the physical warrior that the other. So it becomes this love triangle, and there's some side stories. But you throw into this a village that's hungry, that needs to eat, and the good guy finds the buffalo herd, and these American Indians jump on their horses with nothing but blankets and ride across the prairie, and this buffalo hunt. And the buffalo herd had just been restored in 1907 in the Wichitas, so those buffalo came from the Bronx Zoo, ironically. So we brought a little bit of New York preservation back to Oklahoma in 07, and this is the same herd that they're hunting. So, yes, this is an exceptional film, and we have since broken down each scene with the individual objects, the teepees, the shields, the ornaments, the headdresses, the buckskin dresses the women are wearing. We've identified many of the people in this. The chief of the Kiowa tribe is actually a warrior who would have fought in the Red River Wars in the 1870s out on the High Plains. And here he is in a movie portraying this leader of this group. The teepee that's featured in here turns out to be a very significant teepee to the Kiowas. It was a teepee with battle pictures that goes back to the 1830s and the peace between the Cheyenne and the Kiowas. Well, it turns out we had that teepee in our collections at the Historical Society since 1928. We did not know its significance until we saw it in this movie. And here come the Kiowa elders, recognize it and gathering the stories. So this has allowed us to really explore Kiowa Comanche history, Southern Plains history, in a way that we never had before.
It really, listening to you, it really is hard to overstate the significance of a film like this, not just as a film, but as a document of this cultural history.
Yes, it is. And one thing I like about it, you started off with mentioning the history of American Indians in cinema. We did an exhibit a few years ago about that subject. And I've always kind of, in too broad brush terms, but the earliest Indians as documentary characters, see the aboriginals in their original condition.
Right.
Then you get the middle scene with John Wayne's where Indians are the wilderness, this threatening menace that you have to defeat.
And often portrayed by white actors in those films.
Exactly, and then you get to the period where they finally do films about Indians. Jim Thorpe, Geronimo, two Oklahoma residents at the time, but Chuck Connors plays Geronimo, comically, and Burt Lancaster plays Jim Thorpe. And then you finally get to the final phase that we celebrate with films like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with the chief. Well, that is Will Sampson, a Creek Indian from Okmulgee, Oklahoma. And then Last of the Mohicans with that Magua character that's really, to me, the heart and the center of that film that's so wonderfully done by an Oklahoma producer, by the way, but played by Wes Studi, a Cherokee Indian from Cherokee County who could not speak English until he went to school in the 1940s. So this film, to me, kind of is an umbrella over all of that. Yes, it is American Indians and their original country, wearing their traditional clothing, acting in their traditional ways, but yet it's about individual Indians played by American Indians with full characters, not just this threatening menace, but these are real people responding emotionally with the good and the evil, this dramatic tension that's part of any good art. It's an amazing film.
These were largely, I gather, non-actors, these Native Americans in the film, but having watched a lot of silent films, I actually found the film to be, the naturalism of their movement and actions really makes the film stand out, I think, in the silent period, because this was a time when movie acting, in quotes, was often overly pantomimed and heavily expressive, and it's a much more modern film in many ways because of the way these Native Americans act in the film. Probably because they were untrained to act in silent film.
Right. You can see, I've watched this movie now so many times and done programs with it, and some of these scenes, you can tell that the director, who was from Hollywood, he had been recruited to come out and shoot this film, that he gave them very basic instructions. Mm-hmm. Okay, I want you to walk around the teepee, and I want you to confront. I want you to right. look like you're afraid or you're angry. But then they would do that in their own way. And, of course, growing up in Oklahoma, Indian heritage myself, we're used to the mannerisms and the syntax of speech and certain behavior. And you can see this naturalism that comes out in this movie. And they are able to express themselves. And the quality of the acting, I think, is exceptional in this time period.
It's very earnest for its period. And compositionally, it's beautiful to look at. The cinematography is excellent. I found myself just astonished that something as good as this has been lost for so long. And part of that history is that it apparently only had two screenings, or screened in two locales, Los Angeles and one place in Kansas. Is that right?
Well, that's all we can document. We do know that some of the Indians in the movie went with the producers, which was typical at the time. They'd show a movie and have a stage show before or after. And we do know that they traveled. We're hoping that it was shown more, but we cannot find the documentation. Hopefully, we're going to learn more about the movie, not only what's in the movie, but about the movie itself, where it was shown. We're still looking, and we're not finished with this. This film, I think, will have a long life. We have an entire exhibit up right now in the Oklahoma History Center about the battle teepee in the film, in Kiowa culture. But this film will allow us to open so many doors to the history of film, to the history of the Kiowas and Comanches, to these individual families. We even have interviews that were done in the 1970s by a young Comanche who interviewed his aunts about them being in the movie. These women were still alive at the time. He interviewed them for his film class at the University of Oklahoma.
How about that?
And they're talking about how much money they made and how they were fed and what it was like out there in that summer of 1920 in the Wichitas. So we're still uncovering little gems like that. So this is a window to opportunity to learn more about American Indian history and I think cinema history.
And I know it's been a long road bringing this back to life and getting it preserved and restored and sharing with people, but part of that happy ending in 2013, this title was added to the Library of Congress's National Film Registry, so presumably we'll have it forever now. So congratulations on seeing this project through. Again, Dr. Blackburn, it's a delight to talk to you about this significant work. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I've been discussing the restoration and significance of the long-thought-lost 1920 film, The Daughter of Dawn, with my guest, Dr. Bob Blackburn, Executive Director of the Oklahoma Historical Society, one of the groups instrumental in the preservation of this important film. The Daughter of Dawn was recently released by Milestone Films on home video and is an early and rare example of an attempt to portray Native Americans on screen in an earnest and non-stereotypical fashion. The film was shot over the summer of 1920 in Oklahoma and employed some 300 Native Americans on screen. The Daughter of Dawn was thought lost since the early 1920s, and you can read more about the film and see a clip at milestonefilms.com. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.